Good morning. Good morning, everyone. My name is Lamo. Welcome to the Kadampa Center. In a few minutes, Venerable Chökyilá will begin the Sunday teachings. And before we do that, we'll be saying prayers in this white prayer book. If you're sitting in a chair, it's in the pocket behind your chair. If you're sitting at a pew, it's at the end of the pew. And we'll be saying prayers on the first bay sheet. Children are welcome to come. Oh, looks like it's pretty full up there. you'll see people prostrating, and you're welcome to join us, or else you're perfectly fine to just stand. But we'll be standing when Venerable Chökyilá is ready to start teaching in respect for her teachings and for the all the holy images at the altar, and then we'll start. So let's just take a few moments to get ready to hear the teachings and to settle our minds from the busyness of getting here. While we're waiting, and because the children are here, let's chant some mantras. They're at the bottom of the pink sheet in the white prayer book. You see Green Tara's mantra and Chen Reizig's mantra. So let's start with 8 Chen Reizig mantras, which is Om Mani Padme Hum.
Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum.
Hello, everyone. Welcome, and sorry for that 5 minutes of extra meditation. Technical difficulties. Do you want to continue?
So now turn back to the bay sheet. And let's chant Shakyamuni Buddha's mantra 3 times. You'll find that at the top of the sheet where it says Kadampa Center Prayers. And then the 4 immeasurables in English. And then we'll chant it in Tibetan right underneath there on the same page.
Taya ta omune mune maha.
May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness.
May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies.
Sentientam chedewa
Children are welcome to go to their classes. If they've never been to the center before, if you please wait behind the Gompa door and fill out a survey sheet. Today is Sunday, July 15th, 2012. Sunday teachings by Venerable Trikula.
Well, good morning. Before we get started, I want to take just a minute to rejoice. You know, it's just so amazing all the causes and conditions that have come together for us to be here. You know, somebody had to have the idea to start a center here in Raleigh, and then people had to donate time and money and effort to get this building, and Geshe-la has been with us now for 13 years, and there's all kinds of reasons that happened and efforts that continue to have him here, and just that we each would show up here to be here together today is really a precious, rare, amazing thing. And sometimes without, you know, when we're hustling and bustling, we don't take a minute to think about that. So I just wanted to really celebrate that as we start the program today. So yay. Lamala just led us in the Four Measurables prayer, which is a big hint to my first question. So what does it mean? We're going to talk today about love and compassion. And so what are the Buddhist definitions of those two words? Anybody know? And you can just shout this out. Mostly we'll pass the mic around, but this is quick maybe. Anybody knows? Think of the Four Measurables. Right, so love is the wish for happiness for ourselves and others and the causes of that, yeah. Compassion. Right, so the wish for no one to suffer and have the causes of suffering. So keep that in mind as we're talking today. That might be helpful. All right, so we've been talking about compassion over the last few weeks, and Lama La led us in a great discussion last week, for those of you who were here, where we really were thinking about specific examples. So today what we're going to do is look a little more deeply at the particular aspects of compassion. And I brought along a great teacher to give us a little help here. So we're going to watch short clips from His Holiness and then have discussion in between them. And I'm going to intersperse some news stories as well. So that's going to be today's format. So this first clip is His Holiness. He was recorded in Chicago last year talking about compassion. So this first clip is a short one on that. And as you're watching this clip, keep in mind another quote from His Holiness, which is, love and compassion are necessities, not luxuries. Without them, humanity cannot survive. So we'll watch this clip and then talk about it.
Now, my number one commitment is
karma willing. We will watch.
To promote inner peace. Ultimately based on warm-heartedness, that the way of promotion is not based on religious faith, but based on our biological factor and then scientific findings. That's the main reason, main sort of focusing, using these factors. And more compassionate mind. Your physical health better. Your relation with family member, community member, better, happier. Once we develop genuine, or what's the respect other, out of sense of concern of their well-being, then there is no room of violence, no room of cheating. No room of hypocrisy. If you, out of warm-heartedness, speak truthfully, honestly, you can act transparently. That built trust. Trust built friendship. Happy society. Happy family. Irrespective of whether believer or non-believer. That's what I mean. Commitment.
Okay, so we will be passing the microphone around so that help people hear and also because we're recording. So first off, this clip is called My Number One Commitment. So what is his number one commitment? Who caught that? Nobody? Right, yeah, thanks. So, yeah, promoting inner peace based on warm-heartedness is the quote. But, yeah, I've watched this a few more times, so I've got an unfair advantage. Like I said before, Lamala led us in discussion last week, really looking at some examples of this, whether it was ones we've done ourselves or we've been the recipient of or that we've observed in other people. So bring to mind something, whether you were here last week and you heard those or you can just think of something that has to do with someone being warm-hearted, whether it was you or someone else. Just bring to mind an example of that. And then think about that in terms of it being a number one commitment, like the main thing. Like, why do you think His Holiness would say it's his number one commitment?
Well, if people aren't thinking about others and their happiness, then that's kind of the start of it all. So if they're not thinking of that, then the rest can't follow.
Okay. All right. So it's got to be the basis for other things to come.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I think he mentioned that he basically wanted to. I think he mentioned that he just wanted to inhabit itself with that particular concept of those thoughts so that nothing else would have room, you know, to live.
So if you've got the mind of compassion, there's no room for other negative thoughts like hatred or anger or something. Okay, great.
What I heard was that it's a matter of existential. We won't survive if we don't have that, so what I heard him say is that there's not really a choice. Either we can go forward and thrive or we'll destroy ourselves or something to that extent.
So almost you didn't use this word, but almost about like the interdependence. If we don't take care of each other, we won't make it.
Yes.
Is that a fair restatement?
That's what I heard.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. So I have sorry, Andre.
I thought that one of the things you said was very important, and that is the benefits of compassion, right? And that it's a better mind, better health, and just more happiness.
Mm-hmm.
When you live a compassionate life, practice compassion.
Okay, great. So that's a great segue into the story I'm going to read. This is from the news just this week, from Yahoo Shine, my main source of news. I really love collecting stories of, you know, happy things and hopeful things, and so I've got a whole stockpile if anybody ever needs them. But this was just from this week. I'll read a couple excerpts from it. Doug Eaton celebrated his 65th birthday by giving away money in Oklahoma City on Wednesday. Doug wanted to celebrate his birthday in a big way, so he turned to his friends for ideas. I asked a bunch of my friends on Facebook, what should I do on my 65th? And I got a whole long list of stuff. And one of my friends said, why don't you do 65 random acts of kindness? So that's exactly what he did, spending 65 minutes standing on a corner in Oklahoma City handing out $5 bills to people who passed by. He told his Facebook friends that he handed out more than $375, but the response and the amount of good cheer he shared was priceless. From a distance, Eaton looked a bit like any other panhandler holding a sign at a street corner, but instead of a plea for money, his sign read, I have a home and a car and a job. Do you need a few bucks for some coffee? Some people drove by several times wondering if they read his sign correctly. Many people murmured, I can't believe this, or bless you, as he handed them the cash. Others were reluctant to take his money, and he had to tell them, it's okay, it's just a blessing, and explain that this was his way of celebrating his milestone birthday. One obviously needy truck holding a family came around the corner a second time after misunderstanding the first time to give me $2, he said, just to bless me for what I was doing. I took their money and gave them a $5, so we kind of traded blessings. It's just been fantastic, Eaton said. Some people who don't take the money just say, man, I love what you're doing. I don't want to take it, but you give it to someone who needs it. And the 65 minutes spent handing out money wasn't Eaton's only random act of kindness for the day. And his final quote was, this day has been one of the biggest blessings of my recent life. I don't know if I can wait until another birthday to do it again. But what if it became a habit? Or what if everyone, or at least a lot of people, did their birthday number of random acts of kindness on their birthday? How good would that be? So that's just a little teaser now to continue our discussion. Okay, so this next clip is His Holiness talking about the meaning of life. So go ahead, Chip.
Affection or compassionate attitude, warm-heartedness, is very, very important for one's own well-being, for one's own happiness. So don't consider practice of compassion is something religious matter, or practice of compassion is something good for other, not necessarily to oneself. That's a totally mistake. So, since from childhood, we already equipped this seed of compassion. We learned from mother and ourselves in order to become parent. The seed already there. Now that seed, we must keep, nurture, whole our life. The biological factor of compassion is limited, biased, and more depend on others' attitude. Now that as a seed, then using reasons, awareness, that seed, compassion, can further develop unbiased compassion. Not depend on others' attitude, but rather others being itself. So that kind of compassion can reach your enemy or entire sentient being. So that compassion is infinite compassion, unbiased compassion, real compassion. If we become compassionate person, then your life becomes meaningful. Because you yourself happy, calm, peaceful, your friend, or including animals, also you see, get peace. So at the last day of our life, you feel happy. Now whole my life, I'll spend peaceful, friendly, then you really feel happy. Otherwise, at that moment, even you are a billionaire, those money, nothing can be used. No matter what's the good, because of the good body, or beautiful body, all everything have to leave. So at that time, I think genuine satisfaction can bring, if your whole life spent more compassionate life, then you feel, oh, no regret. So, purpose of life is naturally happy life, meaningful life. So in order to make meaningful life, ultimately, warm-heartedness is the key factor.
So we already talked a little bit about some of these themes in response to the last clip. The idea that compassion builds a solid foundation for this meaningful, happy life. Something that's new in this clip that we didn't see in the first one was the idea about at the time of death, how you feel, that you don't have regrets if you led a compassionate life. What do y'all think about that? I mean, is that something that we spend much time, you know, really thinking about, like, how it's going to be at the end? I know some people do. I'm just curious. Elise. Like the Olympic relay.
Sorry about that. I think most people clearly don't think about the end of life on a daily basis. It's when we encounter someone in the family who's dying or a friend who's died that we tend to think about that and relate it to ourselves. Like, how are we going to feel when we're, you know, 80 or 90 years old, or if we get sick and we're dying? And then it makes us feel like, well, maybe we should be doing something to prepare for then. But one thing that I think about, too, is that we all think that we're going to have some kind of a warning before we're going to die. We think that maybe we're going to have the warning of getting old and getting more feeble, or being diagnosed with an illness, and then we're going to, so we, even when we think about dying, we think we're going to have some kind of warning system will give us a little extra time to speed up our preparation. But clearly that's not always the case. And so I think that it's really important for us to be thinking about how we feel each day. How can we bring peace to ourselves each day? So whether our death is a surprise in time or way, or whether we have some time to prepare, you know, it's like cramming for a test, you know, it's just not as good as if you've been studying all along.
Yeah, thanks, Elise. I saw another hand just in front of you. I thought, no? Okay, Mary.
I think a lot of times what comes to my mind when we're talking about death is our own death and preparation for our own death. But some time ago, a friend of mine died. And what struck me is that there was a lot of strife between her and her daughters. And I think that if you have problems with somebody, you're not kind to them, whatever your difficulty is, if they all of a sudden die and you don't have time to be kind to them and to make it up to them, you'll never have a chance again. And you kind of live with that. Whereas if you are kind to people and compassionate, then you'll never have those regrets. And that's perfectly, I mean, that's very selfish, but I think it's good for the other person, certainly, if you've been kind and compassionate to them, and then you don't have those regrets, and neither do they.
Sure. And His Holiness says all the time that it's sort of a wise selfishness. You know, if you are behaving in this way, it does benefit you. But that doesn't mean it's a bad thing, because it benefits you.
Yeah.
Because it benefits others too. Yeah, Luis.
I heard in there also, he distinguished between, I don't know how to say this, regular compassion, but then ultimate compassion. And
yeah,
it's easy for me to be kind to people I know, or someone has done something for me in the past, but to have that kind of compassion for someone who may be, say, the child abuser in your community, that's taken it at a level that we need to go, but it's obviously a little difficult.
Right, and that's an excellent point, and that's actually the next clip's going to talk some more about.
Sorry.
That. No, it's great. It's a great lead-in. So I have another news story to read. This is from treehugger.com, back from April. And this is a story of a man named Jadav Mole Paying, and he's in northern India. And he made a meaningful life in a very interesting way. It all started way back in 1979 when floods washed a large number of snakes ashore on a sandbar. One day after the waters had receded, Paying, only 16 years old then, found the place dotted with dead reptiles, and that was the turning point of his life. The snakes died in the heat without any tree cover, he said. I sat down and wept over their lifeless forms. It was carnage. I alerted the forest department and asked them if they could grow trees there, and they said nothing would grow. Instead, they asked me to try growing bamboo. It was painful, but I did it. There was nobody to help me. Nobody was interested. He's now 47. While it's taken years for Paying's remarkable dedication of planting to receive some well-deserved recognition internationally, it didn't take long for the wildlife in the region to benefit from the manufactured forest. Demonstrating a keen understanding of ecological balance, Paying even transplanted ants to his burgeoning ecosystem to bolster its natural harmony. Soon, the shadeless sandbar was transformed into a self-functioning environment where a menagerie of creatures could dwell. The forest, now called the Mole Woods, now serves as a safe haven for numerous birds, deer, rhinos, tigers, and elephants, species increasingly at risk from habitat loss elsewhere. Incredibly, the spot today hosts a sprawling 1,360 acres of jungle that Paying planted single-handedly. So, you know, if you start thinking one person can't make a difference, well, 30 years of planting can make a difference. So I'm wondering, you know, it's exactly your point, Louise, that he was driven by compassion for the snakes, right? So many people are afraid and don't necessarily have that compassion. And then the benefit was much more than just for the snakes, right? He benefited the elephants and tigers and all these other animals that don't have other places to be. So, all right. So this next clip we're going to watch speaks exactly about the biased versus unbiased compassion. And this was from a question and answer session that His Holiness often holds after he gives teachings. And this was for a group of Thai Buddhists at his residence in Dharamsala last year.
Now, compassion. As I mentioned yesterday, I think yesterday, the compassion, sense of concern of well-being towards one's own friend, those people who really show to you positive. That sense of concern is, as I mentioned there, biased. Actually, very much involve attachment. So as soon as attachment develops, that's unrealistic attitude, biased.
And the biased, limited attachment often brings hatred. Clear. So, a compassion which we want to promote, it is unbiased compassion. That compassion, once we train not only towards one's own close people, but also enemy. Because the biased affection or compassion mainly oriented other sort of action. Action towards me, good, positive, friendly. So I love them. These people harm to me, negative action towards me, so instead of affection, feel anger. The other unbiased compassion, not oriented their action or their attitude, but simply they are also sentient being or human beings. They also want happiness. They also have every right to overcome suffering. So, on the basis of that kind of awareness, then develop genuine sense of concern. That's unbiased, right? Unbiased compassion. Genuine compassion. Here, no attachment.
Okay, so His Holiness is making the distinction between the biased and the unbiased compassion, right? So the biased compassion, that's the sort of what's in it for me, what have you done for me lately compassion, right? And one of the things that really struck me about this clip was the idea that we would think that that's still better than a negative thought, right? Having biased compassion is better than having anger or something. But His Holiness says it very often actually leads to that the biased compassion leads to hatred, is what the quote was. That seems kind of counterintuitive to me at first. Any thoughts about that? Why would that be? Yeah, Karen.
Well, it's counterintuitive if you just even think about your experience when somebody doesn't give you what you want. Then you're expecting it. So it's very easy to turn to dislike, hatred, non-attachment.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. So almost two sides of the same coin. Yeah. Yeah. Anybody else?
Yeah, I think we have to really be careful, right? Because, you know, you got this stuff happening all the time, and we think we're being very compassionate, but we're really selective oftentimes who we're going to share our compassion with, right? And so we look at someone, and oftentimes we think, well, this person is deserving of our compassion, and this person is not deserving of our compassion. So we think about the people who have never committed a crime, right? And we say, and then something happens to this person, and then person's loved one dies, and then all this compassion, right? But these guys in prison, their loved one dies, and there's no compassion, you know, for them. Or we see someone who is in need of a liver transplant, right? The person who's an alcoholic or a drug user. And we think, well, this person doesn't deserve this, you know, and the person who hasn't been an alcoholic, this person deserves this. So in one sense, we sort of like make ourselves like God, right? We're kind of like or the way that God is presented to us. You know, we decide this person is deserving of our compassion. This person is not deserving of our compassion, and that is a really, really big problem. So I think we really have to really look at, well, am I compassionate to all sentient life, no matter what the situation? You know, all people, all life deserving of kindness and compassion and love, I think.
Yeah, so our judgments can really get in the way of us having that unbiased.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah.
Sure. Anybody else? Way back in the corner, Joanna.
I think in the spirit of what Andre said, he offered a very useful tool for approaching that kind of situation where you have someone who's done something that is negative. And that is to orient yourself not to the negative action or the negative speech of that other person, but orient your mind to the very simple fact that here's another sentient being who's just seeking happiness like me and everyone else.
And that's really simple in concept, obviously hard to apply, but very clear concept, I think. Has anybody ever tried that? Like when you've been really angry, has it arisen in your mind in the moment to think, they just want happiness like me? Or yeah. Well, afterthought's better than no thought. That's getting closer. Yeah. Yeah. I saw some heads shaking. Yes. Anybody want to share a story? Yeah.
So I'm not always good at remembering this, but I heard something that helps me often, and that someone said that everybody's doing the best they can with the tools they have. And so even though, and I'd welcome your comment, maybe I'm setting myself up as grandiose in the sense of saying, well, you know, that guy who just did something incredibly irritating or irresponsible or whatever, okay, he just doesn't have the tools yet. But still, that helps me be compassionate with them. And also with myself sometimes. And I go, oh, well, that was a boneheaded thing. I guess I had that to learn. But I think that everybody is doing the best they can, I think is true. It's just a matter of what tools you got.
Yeah. Well, I think to get at your question about grandiose or not, it completely matters what's coming from your side around that. If it's truly a compassionate helping you work with your mind and be kinder to the person to think they're doing the best they can, they just don't have the tools yet, that to me sounds spot on in applying these tools. If it's I'm better than them because they don't have the tools yet, right, then that's of some concern, maybe, you know, but yeah, I think that it's exactly what you're talking about. Just really trying to figure out how in the moment we can truly have a connection with the person. Yeah.
I understand the concept of compassion, but sometimes I think it's important to sort of show that the person crossed the line and without being angry, I mean, the concept that I see, let me explain it better. It's like, if you're just compassionate and forgetful and you forgive things to others, and then they don't know that you're putting a limit and they're going to do it again. So how we can address the need for respect without, and also expressing compassion. Like, if somebody harmed me, I need to show that that's harmful to me. And that really was painful. But at the same time, at the same way, I want to express compassion, but I want to show the limit that I'm not allowed certain behavior or something is harmful for me or how we play that game. Like, it's people sometimes need to see you frowning to respect you. You know what I mean? Or sometimes they don't get that you are forgiven and to give it another chance or possibility. So, is that clear? Or
yeah, I think I understand your question. And it seems to me that when we're talking about compassion, it's always with a long view in mind. So if your six-year-old child wants to run out in traffic, it's not compassionate to say, I want to support you in doing what you want to do, right? And so the long view for that child is we want to keep them safe and teach them things, you know. Now, it's an easier example with children than when we're talking about other fully functioning adults and setting limits with them. But still, it's not about saying, it's not doing the other person a favor by allowing them to be abusive. But the key, if it's coming from a compassionate point of view, is for that to be the reason. The reason is because it's not compassionate for them to allow them to keep doing it. Does that make sense? So it's not, it's always thinking about they're another person who wants to be happy, but their way of thinking they're going to be happy in the short term isn't okay for me, you know? And I think that's okay to set those kind of limits, but it's very much still, keeping in mind that it's beneficial for both of you to be setting those limits. Does that make sense?
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah.
I just wanted to share an example, and I think sometimes we can remind each other, but we were at the mall several years ago, and a mother was standing there screaming at her little child, maybe 3 or 4 years old, and the little boy was just looking up at her so earnestly, and she, I mean, the anger was just unbelievable, and she pulled back her hand to slap him across the face, and I screamed. And as I screamed, the person I was with said, "Oh, that poor mother. We need to go buy her a cup of coffee. I just can't imagine how that anger is affecting her right now." And I wasn't even thinking about the mother.
Yeah. Yeah, I think with all these issues, they're very complicated in application sometimes because, you know, we don't have peer view yet. If we did, we wouldn't have to be asking the questions. So it's not that there's always one clear right answer to follow the compassionate way, you know. But I think always testing our own motivations and our own boundaries is where we're going to grow, you know. And so it's not always clear and straightforward. There can be a lot of approaches because screaming may have helped the child, you know, so that he didn't get slapped. And your friend had the idea of the mother, right? So it's not like either of those are wrong. Yeah. So, okay. Another story. Oh, was there another one? Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, thank you. Meditation on equanimity helps me. Mm-hmm. And if I am not compassionate in a situation with someone that I would like to be compassionate with, everyone. someone at home, let's say. I can look back on that particular situation and think, what will I do next time? And that has helped me because there almost always is a next time.
Yeah. Yeah, there is almost always a next time. It's true. Unless it's just a rare, you know, encounter out at the shopping mall. I mean, you know, our biggest struggles, of course, are with the people we spend the most time with, right? So, yeah, that's a really good point. And having compassion for ourselves through the process, right? It's not only for others, you know? It's like the old adage, you have to love yourself before you can love someone else, right? Compassion for yourself first. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so this is my final news story. This one was from last month in Ohio. There was a high school runner and she was at the state track meet in Ohio and she won a state title. Her name, is Megan Vogel. And, incredibly, that might not even be what she or anyone else remembers most about her day. Because she later committed one of the most selfless acts of the year on the track. She stopped running the 3,200 meter final to help along a foe who had collapsed just 20 feet from the finish line. So the story is that Vogel's running along. She's, you know, already got her title earlier in the day. She comes across her teammate, or not her teammate, an opponent from another high school who's collapsed. They're both out of contention. They're going to be the last two to cross the finish line. So Vogel picks up the person who has fallen. And for the last 20 feet, they're walking sort of arm in arm. And then at the last moment, Vogel pushes the other person across the line to cross in front of her. And she's later, when she's interviewed, she said, well, she was in front of me when she fell. I was going to let her have it before me. And her quote about how it felt to actually do it, she said, helping her across the finish line was a lot more satisfying than winning the state championship. And so, you know, I think the theme for me about these three news stories is that the people keep saying, like, doing this thing for somebody else felt better than, you know, if I'd done something or when I did do something for myself. And I think it's these are real life examples that speak to the theory, you know, that we do feel better if we put others first. So anyway, another Yahoo Sports news. Okay, so the next clip maybe speaks a little bit about the question about sort of when you have compassion fatigue, what do you do? So let's look at the next one. Oh, and this is from a clip from the movie Dalai Lama Renaissance.
Our fundamental thing is, we want happiness. We do not want to die. We do not want even mosquitoes' pain. I do not want. But sometimes I really find difficult, you see, dialogue with mosquito and my pain. So, as I mentioned earlier, it's a mosquito. Mentally, sometimes I feel, let give some blood. If that is it, no malaria. If I'm sure, no malaria. That's what you see. First mosquito comes. Sometimes I give some blood. Then second comes. Third comes. That's difficult. Still difficult. But in any case, you see, I'm practicing. You see, try to help other people, try to give some comfort to others as much as I can. I forgot what I'm saying. Mosquito take my idea.
So I think the question of feeling like you're giving more than you have to give, you know, all these questions, they're very important because if we really are trying to apply this, you know, where the rubber meets the road, then we have to know these answers to these questions. The theory is great, but how do we really apply it? You know, so one of the things that I was wondering if people would want to talk about is what are ways that you recharge or that you even know when you need to recharge, you know, when you've sort of given what you can give graciously. How do you know? I'm asking hard questions today, I think. Yeah, in the back.
For me, I know that it's time for me to kind of recharge when I kind of withdraw from other people to kind of cut off even the opportunity for me to be compassionate to someone else, you know. So it's like, oh, well, I guess I don't have to because the opportunity hasn't presented itself. But when I'm at that point, then I know I need to start reconnecting and reaching out to other people more often because I feel like something's missing if I miss out on those opportunities to be compassionate. So,
yeah.
But if I recognize those signs, then I act on them. So
it's like a dance in and out of that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And I think some of you have probably heard me tell this story before, but when I was in India, I had a teacher who led this very elaborate visualization of pretty extreme giving, like actually imagining giving your body over, you know. And, you know, I'm going along with it thinking, okay, this is, I wish I was there. I'm so not there, you know. And then at the end, he laughs, this great, like a Dalai Lama laugh, and he says, we're not here yet. I just want you to be starting to think about it, you know. And it's like, you know, there is a theory about the ultimate compassion, you know, the story of the Buddha in previous lives giving his body over for the hungry tigress so she wouldn't eat her cubs. And, you know, we have all of these rich stories, but we have to be realistic about starting where we are, not where we wish we were, right? Because if we try to start where we wish we were, then that's a pretty shaky foundation and it doesn't really sustain. Yeah. Joanna.
I think we can also help remind each other when it's time for us to recharge. I'll tell you a funny story. Some of us accompanied Rinpoche, Lama Zopa Rinpoche, when he was leaving after one of his teachings here. We accompanied him to the airport. And any of you who know Rinpoche know that he travels on Rinpoche time, not on everyone else's time. So we were getting all very antsy that he would go through security and get all, he had artifacts with him. He was carrying amazing array of things that he could get through security in time to get on the plane. So we finally got him through security. And one of the people in our party called Venerable Roger, his attendant, on the cell phone and said, "Are you on the plane? Did you get on the plane?" And Venerable Roger, in a very calm, "Did everybody get on the plane?"
I'm sorry. So they asked, "Did everybody get on the plane?" And Venerable Roger, I couldn't hear the other side of it, but there was this sort of pause. And he was starting to say, "Well, there's a couple of empty seats, so I'm not sure." And the person said, "No, I mean you and Rinpoche and groups, did you get on the plane?" He said, "I don't care about everybody else." And he said, and you know, I could hear, "Well, that's not very bodhicitta."
Yeah, expanding our circle of what we mean by everybody. Right, right. So one other thing I want to add about this concept before we watch the final clip is, so, you know, Geshe-la will remind us all the time that regret in and of itself is neutral. So if you regret a positive action, that's actually negative, right? So, you know, I think one of the things we need to be mindful about is giving beyond our limits, you know, because then we might regret it. And then that's, you know, taking away a lot of the good because then we're regretting having done something positive. So I think, you know, again, no simple answers. We all need to figure out for ourselves in each moment what this means, but good stuff to be thinking about anyway. And to have kindness with yourself when you're not that perfectly unbiased, compassionate person yet, you know. Yeah, Sarah.
I find that that's when I know it's time that I need to recharge, is when I am doing work for the Dharma or when I'm trying to help someone else and in my mind I'm unhappy about it.
Yeah.
When I'm just like, you know, "Oh, I don't have time for this," you know, or, you know, "This is just one more thing I don't know how to deal with," or, you know, when my mind starts spinning into that negative, that's when I know, okay, you've overdone it, so you need to step back for a while and just do, even just watch a movie or just, you know, give your mind time to relax again, and then you can come back to it with the kind of that joyful effort we're always talking about. Otherwise, you know, it's true. You lose that ability to be happy about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. Knowing when to recharge. It's a key. All right. So this final clip is from the inaugural address that His Holiness gave to the Hindustan Times Leadership Summit in Delhi in 2010. So it's a short clip about, you know, continue on about compassionate attitude.
The compassionate mind is very, very important. Fears, anger, jealousy, these based on self-centered attitude. Develop more sort of sense of because of the caring of others' well-being, your heart automatically opens. That brings openness, straightforward, transparent, honest. That brings friendship. We are social animals. For individual survival, entirely depend on the rest of the community. So usually, through my self-centered attitude, develop distrust, suspicion. That brings fear. So more open mind. So no matter what their attitude, but your side, develop sense of concern of their well-being. Then you can keep inner peace. And sense of concern of others' well-being bring inner strength, self-confidence. So any social animal, I think like bees or ants, those social animals, they have no religion, no constitution, no law, but they work together. Nature creates like that way. So we are also a social animal. But because of our intelligence, sometimes, and intelligence with short-term interest, narrow-mindedness, and the negative emotion, is sometimes forgetting our basic nature.
So this clip, in part anyway, is getting at what Royden was talking about, I think, that, you know, this basic nature of us being social and needing each other and interdependence. I think for a lot of us, this idea of being independent is so important. And I'm just curious if people have stories about either in themselves or other people they've watched where they kind of were struggling with the being independent versus recognizing that that's maybe not really possible in a complete sense about instead that we are interdependent. I don't know. Any thoughts on that?
I know sometimes I'm challenged by accepting compassion from others. My mind wants to go with, why are they doing this? Do I trust them to be compassionate towards me without wanting something in return?
Mm-hmm.
So on the flip side of me showing compassion, that's my challenge with accepting it at times. But that's also a reminder for me that I need to do it too, like you were talking about recharging. That's also a reminder to not only accept it, but to give it in return.
Yeah, that's a really excellent point that, you know, accepting it just at face value can be really difficult. Yeah. Because either we create stories like you're talking about the suspicion, you know, what do they want? You know, what's the cost of actually accepting this? Or if you're looking at it from the independent thing, it could be maybe I don't want to accept it because it shows that I'm weak or, you know, we create so many stories around it. Yeah. So I like your point about just sort of trying to expose those stories when you're in that moment. Yeah. Thank you.
I think independence and interdependence are interwoven in our lives, particularly as we get older. And I've talked to many people here about my mom, who's 89, and just other family members who we've helped along the way. They have times of great independence, but then when they need help, we swoop in and help and then get them back going again and off they go again. Their self-image is that they're very independent, but I think we all try, if we can help each other when we really need help, that is so rewarding on both sides, you know, it's so appreciated and it's also such a loving thing to do, so.
Yeah. So allowing people as much freedom as you can and then being there to help when they need it. Yeah. Okay. Andre, then back here, Benny Royce. And then we probably need to wrap up.
A couple of things went through my mind, and I'm gonna just pick one. All right. and that is this, you know, the Dalai Lama was talking about the human being, a social animal, but because of our intellect or our intelligence, I find that gets into the way, mm-hmm. of being compassionate. We can think ourselves out of doing a kind deed. You know, we give it some thought, and then we come up with all the reasons why we shouldn't do this. And before we know it, we don't do it. We miss the opportunity. We miss that chance to practice compassion. And I think of Venerable Robino and chasing the Buddha. She was talking about just giving donations, and she said that she doesn't even think about it. You know, she sees people like in a city like New York, and she just gives. She doesn't even think about it at all. And I think the reason for that is because if she thought about it, she could think, well, again, then we get into the biased compassion, unbiased compassion, right? We think, well, no, this person is deserving of my money. I know this person is going to spend it on alcohol, or this person is going to do this with it, or this person will do that with it, this person, you know. And so our intelligence really, really get in the way sometimes. So you've just got to give, you know, and just don't even think about it. Just do it, you know. And that's what I think, yeah, about whatever we're talking about. That's all I think.
Thanks, Andre. Thank you.
I think more to Andre's point is that one of the challenges that I have is that I'm pretty good at the biased compassion, and it's just one of the thoughts that I really hadn't thought about until today is that when I do something out of compassion, you know, it's dawned on me that I really do have an attachment to it. And that attachment is that I expect compassion in return. And, you know, I can't tell you how many times, you know, even like within family dynamics, I said, well, you know, I did this thing for you unselfishly. Why can't you be like that?
Right.
And I guess that in of itself is an attachment because, you know, I'd like to be at the place where I could have that compassion and expect no compassion
right.
whatsoever, because typically that's what I get, you know. but it's just dawned on me that, you know, I need to take my compassion to another level, and it's like agape love. You know, I need to be able to give it freely and expect nothing in return. And so that's my challenge for the rest of the day anyway.
That's a really excellent point, and I think, you know, not an easy one to either realize when we're doing it or to shift, but I think, of course, it's possible to do. So, yeah, thank you for sharing that, because I think you're not alone. Yeah.
To speak to the interdependence question and how we're independent yet very, very interdependent, I think about food and water, where I don't produce my own clean water and I don't produce my food. And for our vacation, we spend a day and a half at a friend's farm. And the desperation because of the drought, I could see in his eyes. And so now I'm back at work and I hear somebody saying, oh, it's another beautiful day. And then I hear complaints when there's rain. It really makes me realize that, you know, I can appreciate the interdependence on the people that are making our food and try to get their perspective a little bit more when I'm disappointed about not being able to bicycle in or something like that. So
sure.
It's just that's the way I find and appreciate the interdependence a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that, Roy. And I think all these things, you know, meditating on equanimity, looking at interdependence, all these help bolster our compassion, right? And the, I'm sure familiar to a lot of you, the idea of as you're sitting down at a meal, really try to think of how many people were involved to that being there in front of you, you know? It's an oldie but a goodie. It's really nice to revisit, you know? So it can really help us have, you know, more of that generalized compassion because so many people I don't know made it possible that I could eat this meal, you know? Well, thanks so much, everyone, for your comments. Got a couple of things to tag on here today, so I'll start to wrap up. I had been asked last week and this week to talk just a little bit about the Tara statue sponsorship. So, you know, Geshe-la brought us these lovely Taras a year and a half ago, and about half of them have been sponsored. So there's still opportunity if you're so moved to sponsor any of these statues. And speaking of the interdependence, one of the things that I think is so amazing about what Geshe-la has done by bringing these is he's allowing us to create merit in just so many different ways. You know, we have a monthly Tara practice. The next one will be this coming Saturday, and anyone's welcome to come to that. And we do that here. Benefits the center, of course, benefits those who come and participate. And then for people who sponsor statues, they're involved in all of that benefit too. So there's just all kinds of ways it can work together. So anyway, if anybody's interested in that, is there anybody here who they can see? So you can see Sandy if you want to learn more about sponsoring the statues. And then we have a final video that Sandy put together. Sandy, do you want to come up and introduce it?
Thank you, thank you. Many of you remember a couple of months ago when Geshe Sangpo visited his home for the first time in many, many, many years. And one of the things that he found when he went to his home village in Tibet, thank you, I was thinking of Paul. Too many things on my mind. I'll bring it here. When he was able to go home and visit his family in Tibet, one of the things he found in the village was that the village prayer wheel was really in some terrible shape. And it was his project that he took on to get the village prayer wheel refurbished. They had to fix a lot of different things. The project actually is finished now. Many of you took part in this, donated money to help to create this project, and Geshe Sangpo wanted to find a way to be able to thank you all and show you actually what happened. So the villagers actually took a lot of pictures, they took a lot of video and sent it back here for us.
Nope, that's okay. No, it's a thank you to all of you and to let you see exactly what happened there. So.
Yeah.
Rejoice at all of the positive merit of this project and everything that we created here today by thinking about this, and just think about how we want to go out there and make a meaningful life day by day, and cultivate the compassion as much as we can. I have one last quote from His Holiness to leave with everyone. I'm sure many of you have heard this one before. He says, "Be kind whenever possible. It's always possible."
Okay, so now let's go back to the white prayer book to read the dedications. It's the first pink sheet in the book. Before that, I'd like to read the prayer list. Prayers for a happy rebirth. All those killed by natural and man-made disasters. All the Tibetans who have been killed or have taken their own lives in the struggle for religious freedom. The inmate who was beaten to death for being gay. Teresa Brooks, Mary Elizabeth Axtell Hare, Tina Hightouse, Sarah Roberts, Adam Johnston, Charles Gregory King, Tony Lipscomb, Donald Mahler, Kendrick Morrison, Michelle Moss, Sue Stevenson, Jonathan Tagle, Lee Ventura, Takini the dog, Duncan the dog, Sadie the cat. Job search. Eve Ihara, Beth Andrew, Gary Kane, Daniel Cunningham, Jenny First, Michael Fultz, Kate Harvey. Andrea Johnson, Wendy King, Catherine Myers, April Rocker, Tony Sloan, Michelle Thompson, Lori Todd, S.S. Anadine Silver, and Sarah. Difficulties of body and or mind. Venerable Lama Zopa Rinpoche, Lama Pema Wangtuk, Venerable Cherkila. All those harmed by natural and man-made disasters. For the Tibetan people and for the Chinese authorities, may the nonviolent path lead to full reconciliation and religious freedom. The cellmate of the inmate who was beaten to death for being gay, who was also beaten but survived. Those, especially the prison inmates who acted with violence or struggling with violent tendencies and homophobia. Denise Allen, Jim Barnes, Teresa Brooks family, William Clyde Burns family, Bill Burke, Ron Burroughs and family, Hester Clifford, Herb Cunningham, Allegra Dahlquist, Larry Davis, Carrie First, Mildred Gooch, Gertrude Garrett, Mary Elizabeth Axtell Harris family, Dennis Davis Helton, Lola Hilliard, Claude Hollyfield, Leslie and Joan Inman, John Eiler, Sarah Roberts Eiler's family, Kenny Jackson, Buddy, Andrew Johnson, Bill Johnson and family, Suggy Jones, Susan Joyner, Helen Kasanoff, Charles Gregory King's family, Kathy Collar, Shanti and Kurt Latimer, Tony Lipscomb's family, Aunt Laurie, Alyssa Luck, Carolyn and Granger Marley, Bobby Martin, Jameen Pandya, Lively Pasque, Catherine Paul, Mary Peterson, Aunt Polly, Surinua, Quinlan and her family, Duncan Quinn, Richard Robson, Kenneth Roman, Reuben family, Paula Sable, Rosemary Cease, Evelyn Smith, Mamie Stark, David Underwood, Lee Ventura's family, Claude and Vic Williams, Suzanne Williams, Pierre and Peter Winfield, Judith Wormser, Casey the dog, Ninja the cat, Skippy the dog. So let's start with the first prayer on the pink prayer sheet. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness and prosperity. May there be timely rains and plentiful harvest. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power and may people think of benefiting each other. In the land encircled by snow mountains, you are the source of all happiness and good. All-powerful Chenrezig Tenzin Gyatso, please remain until samsara ends. The one who mastered his speech at a very young age, the one with great patience who received the name Avatara, the one with great precision who spread the teachings of Lama Tsongkhapa on bliss and void, Lama, ornament of the yellow hat tradition, please remain until samsara ends. You who uphold the subduer's moral way, serve as the bountiful bearer of all, sustaining, preserving, and spreading Manjuna's victorious doctrine, who masterfully accomplished magnificent prayers honoring the three jewels, Savior of myself and others, your disciples, please, please live long. And now let's chant seven green Tara mantras for Geshe-la's long, healthy, happy life and for his safe return. Om Taratu Taratu Re Soha. 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 Om Taratu Taratu Re Soha.
Good morning. I'm Robbie Watkins. I have one brief announcement. Summertime's time for vacation and going to the beach, and a lot of us are coming and going. But I just want to remind people that our bills here at the center don't go on vacation. We continue to offer a very full spiritual program throughout the summer, and we have to keep the air conditioning on here. So we do have bills coming in. Historically, the summer months are times when our donations are down, and we plan for that. But any contribution is greatly appreciated. Certainly, if you're interested in the Tara statue sponsorship, it's a great way to support the center and create incredible merit. So you can talk to Sandy about that. If you'd like to make a donation of $5, $10, or whatever, there are boxes around outside, and it's greatly appreciated. Thank you.